Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the weekly show that's all about girl power and food. My name is Carrie Diamond, and I'm the co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb magazine. We're here today at Heritage Radio Network, located in the back of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today's guest is Kim Floresca, the co-executive chef of One Restaurant in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Kim's fascinating career has included stops at Per Se, Spain's legendary El Bulli, and most recently Meadowood in Napa Valley. Thanks for coming by, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
So we're here at Roberta's on a great Sunday. My usual drink, the watermelon slush, is apparently not available. Liz, do you know what's going on?
No, I don't know what the deal is, but I know that we all look very much forward to the watermelon slush, so we will put in a word with the management.
Yeah, please complain on behalf of Radio Cherry Bomb. They only had a frozen pina colada made with vodka.
But well, somehow your glass is empty.
Kim!
Observant guest we have.
Kim's first time, and she's already proving to be an unruly guest.
I'm just saying it must have been delicious.
And I did say I wasn't going to drink the whole thing, but I did. And Kim is sitting across from me and probably wondering why I have these blue dots all over my knee. I was attacked by a vicious mosquito the other night, and my knee was itching so much I thought I was going to lose my mind. And I remember reading someplace that you can put toothpaste on mosquito bites.
Right, I've heard that too.
You have? Have you ever tried it?
No.
So I did. And all I had in my bathroom was Crest 3D. This is not like an endorsement for Crest 3D toothpaste, although I do love it. So I decided to put that on the 7 mosquito bites around my knee, and it works. It's crazy. It works. It looks like my knee is dotted with blue Clearasil right now.
Right.
But I swear to you, it works. So for those of you out there listening and suffering through mosquito season, try some toothpaste.
It's not only good for hygiene, it's also great for mosquito bites.
Exactly.
It's good to know. You learn something new every day.
I've been trying to hunt for that mosquito in my apartment, and I feel like a Liam Neeson character every time. I'm like, where is the mosquito? But I haven't found it yet. So anyway, Kim, we're really, really excited that you're here. You know, you've had such a fascinating career, and clearly moving around and relocating is in your blood. You come from a military family, and you've lived in Germany and around the United States. Staying in one place makes me antsy, you once said. But you don't come from a family of food professionals. So I'm curious, who cooked when you were growing up, and what did they make?
Well, my father was really great at Filipino food. He used to cook lumpia, and actually that was kind of my first introduction to a lot of food. He would make us, and any Filipino family knows that if you make lumpia, you don't make a small batch. You make it enough for the entire community. So we used to roll 500, 600 at a time.
Wow.
And that would be our evening, is watching TV and rolling lumpia. And I cannot do it to this day. It just brings me back to those memories, but I love eating it.
Wait, so I have to profess some ignorance about Filipino cuisine. What is that dish?
Lumpia is like the really skinny egg rolls, like, you fry them with pork and cabbage and shrimp and things like that. And so that was always something that every Sunday, pretty much every Filipino family would have as the staple.
Wow. And when you say skinny, are we talking like a cigarette skinny or?
A little bit thicker. Yeah, like a cigar, if you will.
That's a lot of frying.
Yeah. A lot of rolling, too.
A lot of rolling, a lot of frying. So your dad was in charge, and he basically...
That was... When I was growing up, that was the thing that he would make.
Wow.
And my mom... You know, she was a working mom at night, so trying to take care of two girls was a little bit rough on her, but she made do. There was a lot of traditional Guamanian food that they would make, and that was probably one of the things that I do remember. But as far as cooking, I mean, it was kind of a fend for yourself at the end of the night when you come home from school. A lot of fried bologna and soy sauce with leftover rice kind of night. So
your mom was Guamanian and Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who don't know the term Guamanian, which I didn't know until recently, means you're from Guam.
Exactly.
So such an interesting heritage.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, it goes back, you know, for numerous reasons, not only of the Polynesian culture, but also as a great way to segue from going from Hawaii to Japan. So a lot of military bases would stop there, refuel, and then go back. So that's what most everybody knows Guam as.
Got it. So when did you decide you wanted to be a chef?
Actually, it was when I was 11 years old, and my aunt, who is, I'm not going to remain nameless, she made us a dinner, and it was ground beef that she put in with Italian seasonings in a muffin tin and baked it. It was the worst thing I've ever eaten in my entire life, and vowed to myself that I would, one, never eat food like that, and two, never have people in my company that would ever eat like that. So,
wow. Okay, so at the age of 11, you knew, because of this sort of traumatic food experience, you knew you wanted to be a chef. Did you really formulate that in your brain? Like,
I
that
did.
Equaled me wanting to be a chef?
I did, and I was, it's kind of embarrassing now, but when I was younger, I would take all of the ingredients like they would on when Food Network was just about starting, and I would go into the kitchen and pretend like I was on Food Network, and I would say, you know, you're gonna take 2 tablespoons of this.
You would say it out loud?
Exactly. And my parents would catch me all the time doing it. So
did they get this on videotape?
Thank God, no.
Oh, bummer. So how did you know from, okay, so that little inkling at the age of 11 that you wanted to be a chef, you didn't know chefs, there weren't, your family, they weren't food professionals. How did you figure out what the next steps were?
I just kind of did a lot of research and just read a lot and ate a lot of different things that I'd never tried before, and also, you know, just watch TV. I mean, that was the age when Mario Batali was coming up, and he had Molto Mario.
Molto Mario, yes.
How amazing is that? I mean, you got so much information in 30 minutes. It was incredible. And that hunger kind of lingered into me and wanting to know more about food, and that there is a different, you know, reason that different foods work and why and how exciting it is to find something like that.
So you went to culinary school?
I did. It actually closed when I was on my externship, so that was
of
interesting.
That's terrible. Wait, which was your externship?
So I did an externship actually at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island. I didn't know anything.
That's
so
down
I,
in Florida?
Down in Florida, yep. Mm-hmm. And then I came back because my school had closed. So I finished at a community college just to say I got a degree, and then, you know, went on my merry way.
That's a giant bummer because a culinary school is not cheap.
No. Well, this is a very small kind of vocational school. So
okay.
I think we made out okay.
So you definitely did make out okay. So you had that externship, and then later on in your career, you had an internship at the legendary El Bulli.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us, A, how you got that internship, and B, what it was like?
So my boyfriend Daniel and I have been together, actually yesterday was our 13th anniversary.
Oh,
I know.
Lucky 13. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. So we've actually kind of been traveling around together, and on and off we would write to El Bulli, and they would say one person was accepted but the other person wasn't, so we weren't willing to go without the other person, and so we actually came up with writing constantly and just trying to get our names in there. And they actually did a dinner for Charlie Trotter's 20th anniversary, and they came, it was a ton of chefs, really amazing event, and
this
they were
when
there
you two were working in Chicago.
This is actually when I was working for Thomas in Per Se.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he had flown me out there to Chicago to help him do a dinner, which was really amazing. And they were out there, and I said, listen, I know you get this from everybody, and I know I don't speak the language, but I would love to come out there and work for you. And they said, if you ever make it out there, no problem. So we actually did, and they did let us come to
work
together.
Wow, great. Oh, that's so exciting. I mean, that... Hopefully everyone who's listening to the show knows the history of El Bulli and just what that means to the culinary world at large, but you must have been so excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ferran Adrià, you know, and just being in a restaurant like that, of that caliber, it's such a forward-thinking idea of a restaurant is more education than I think anybody could ever expect for something like that.
So the act of packing up everything you have, moving to Spain with your boyfriend, I'm guessing you don't speak Spanish.
Oh, we do now.
You do now.
Yeah.
Did either of you speak Spanish?
No, but actually we were part of a program called ESICS, and they actually poached us into coming out there. So we did a free 1 month stage. A 1 month traveling of the entire country where they put us up. 1 month of learning Spanish with a Spanish professor, and then 6 months at a restaurant. So we went to Mugarit's first, and then we went to El Bulli.
Oh, it sounds terrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was awful.
So what were some of the big takeaways from working at a place like El Bulli?
Oh, there were so many ingredients that you could never even realize in your wildest dreams that ever actually happened. I remember during staff meal, I've had the best peach even to this day of my life, and how delicious it was. But that's how Ferran was, that nothing could be more delicious than food in the moment and the idea of what deliciousness is mixed in with a little bit of creativity, I think is really, really what is what everyone's after, right?
So you brought away that appreciation for creativity and ingredients, but what about work habits? Did you learn anything that contributed to how you operate your kitchen today?
Yes, actually, a lot of it kind of influences us. We do a lot of group events. So when we do, by that I mean we do a lot of projects that kind of takes everybody together to do and accomplish. So that mentality that Spain provides is one thing that we actually do use in the restaurant.
So another place where you probably learned a lot of excellent work habits was Per Se. And Per Se, as all of you know, is one of the best restaurants in the country and part of Chef Thomas Keller's group. So you work there under Chef Jonathan Benno. What were some of the big lessons there?
Oh, just remain humble, and it doesn't matter how big you can be. Don't be bigger than you actually are. I mean, Jonathan Benno was probably, he is the cook's cook, and pretty much anybody that works for him can attest to that. He is probably one of the best mentors of my career. And just very down to earth, very humble, and very talented.
You know, speaking of humble, I'm always amazed at Chef Keller's story and how he started washing dishes when he was 14, worked for his mom, who was a single mom managing a restaurant. You know, I had the opportunity to interview him out in Napa Valley earlier this year, and we walked around and we stopped at each property, and he would pick up garbage anytime he saw litter on the street. And that really blew me away. I mean, here's a guy who, top of his field, I mean, easily one of the five most important chefs on the planet, and he's stopping and picking up litter outside. I mean, if that doesn't make you rethink your place on the planet, I don't know
yeah,
what
right.
I don't know what else does. So, needless to say, I pick up a lot of litter now outside
and
my own restaurants.
You're making the world a better place now. Look at that.
Exactly. Well, I'll see litter and I'm like, oh, I don't want to pick up. You know, it's Brooklyn. It's like, you don't know what you're picking up. And I'm like, do I want to pick that up? And then I think, well, if Thomas Keller can pick up the garbage outside his restaurant, so can I. Okay. So, so you did Per Se. So one thing we need to tell the listeners is that you and your boyfriend, Daniel Ryan, who mm-hmm. you just celebrated your 13th anniversary with, have worked together for the past 13 years.
Yeah.
And today you're co-executive chefs at One. So it's hard enough to manage one career and land jobs in these top restaurants, but you two have kind of managed to do this as a team.
Yes.
You have to explain how that's worked.
Well, it's not always easy, as anyone can attest to. And you just have to learn how to separate work and life. And once you can figure that part out, I think it almost becomes easy, which is a hard thing to actually overcome. And he's very patient. I'm kind of a bully in the kitchen to him, I'm
sure. You are?
Probably.
Oh, you know, that's funny. I meant to say about Per Se, I toured the kitchen a few months ago, and it was so quiet and so calm. I was shocked. No music, no nothing.
Yeah.
Was it always like that?
Yes. It's very focused. You have to be focused to be able to keep up with the rhythm of everyone else. So it's a very competitive environment. You had no time to do anything else but work.
You weren't back there taking cigarette breaks and checking your iPhone?
I don't think anybody there smokes.
Oh, that's good.
Well, when I was there, at least.
This is a subject for another show, but I'm shocked how many people in the food industry smoke. Anyway, back to you and your boyfriend. You know, I wasn't even getting at what it's like to work together with a life partner, which is hard enough, but more that you two were able to sort of land jobs in the same cities together, and sometimes at the same restaurant. You both worked at Meadowood together.
Right. We actually moved to Chicago and New York without jobs. So how we managed to do that, I mean, it's fairly simple in the restaurant world. There's so many great restaurants that you can apply to and just really push yourself to do. But when we came back from Spain, Daniel actually got a job as a sous chef, pastry sous chef, at the French Laundry. And I was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I just heard that this up-and-coming chef, Christopher Costow, just won Food and Wine. And, you know, he was doing something different. And nowadays, it's very hard to see something like that. And to help him build his restaurant to what it is now, I mean, that was a life lesson in itself. He's so gracious and very humble and very kind and very hardworking, and probably one chef that I know truly, truly, truly loves food from, you know, his soul, and will talk about it every single day. And not a lot of chefs still do that. But he's definitely one that has a great palate and a great sense of idea of where the food wants to go. And that was really fun to be able to learn from him.
I've never been to Meadowood, but it's very high on my restaurant bucket
it's
list.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
So I read an interview where you said, talking about you and your boyfriend, we were very young, very eager, wanting to know what was the next thing that we could do to make ourselves and our careers take off. So every move we made was calculated. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really interesting because some people's careers just happen and take shape without plotting each move like a chess player. But I got the sense that you're more of a planner than someone just throwing it out to the universe.
Yeah. I mean, there are some chefs that are very analytical and very precise. And what we did was we knew that we had to go work in the best restaurants at those times. And so we didn't know if we were going to get a job, but we just moved there and just didn't stop until we got the job that we wanted. So luckily it worked out.
That's
well
amazing.
For the both of us.
That's amazing. That just says a lot about you and your confidence and your skill and your talent.
I don't know about confidence or skill, but it was definitely a drive to want to become better. So, I mean, that was really a huge part of us.
So, what do you wish someone had told you when you were starting out, now that you've had all these great experiences?
Oh, gosh. Take more notes and eat more food, probably.
Take more notes and eat more food. You have to explain what that means.
Oh, there were so many times when I know that a dish was on a menu, maybe something I'd never seen, but I think I wish if I had tried that dish, what would my reaction have been? To remind myself the path that we've gone through. You know, food is a love story, and it is for everybody, whether you know it or not. And I wish I would have written that love story a little bit sooner in our career, but it was fun. I mean, while it lasted. Well, while it's still going, hopefully.
And it's still going strong.
Hopefully.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we're back, we'll talk to Kim about the North Carolina chef scene, the food she makes, and why she cooks.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with Kim Floresca, the co-executive chef of one restaurant in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So let's talk about North Carolina for a minute. The state has gotten attention lately for all the great female chefs who reside and work there, all of whom we love here at Cherry Bomb. You've got Andrea Rusing at Lantern, Vivian Howard from Chef and the Farmer, Katie Button of Curate, who also just had a baby. We need to check in with Katie.
Congratulations.
One of these days.
Gisella.
Gisella, oh, that's such a pretty name. Did you cross over at El Bulli?
We did, Katie? Actually.
You
Daniel
did.
Daniel worked with her in pastry.
Oh, what
and
a
we used to get
world.
Rides from her all the time. So
rides
thanks, Katie.
From her? Oh, that's funny. And then, of course, I mean, you can't talk about North Carolina without talking about Ashley Christensen, who has her restaurant and bar empire in Raleigh. And you just told me she's opening yet another place. Are you in touch with any of these gals? Are you friends?
Yes. I mean, it's such a small community that everyone's been so supportive since we've been there. And yeah, they come into the restaurant and very, like I said, very, 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 very supportive and interested in what we do. And we couldn't have been more grateful to have such gracious host in their state. I mean, they're so intelligent and so career driven. It's just they're amazing.
And it's so interesting because each person is doing something so different from the other. You know, what Vivian is doing out in her part of North Carolina and what she's doing with her great PBS show.
Right.
And then you've got Andrea, who's got one of the most interesting restaurants in the South and definitely one of my favorites, Lantern. And now she opened that hotel.
In the Durham, yeah, the Durham Hotel.
It's called the Durham. So excited about that. And there'll be a restaurant in
yes,
the hotel?
Yes, I believe so. She's going to have a restaurant and then a rooftop as well.
So much fun. And then Ashley's unstoppable. I mean,
you can't keep up with her. I don't think anybody can.
You know, Pools, Beasley's, Death
Chucks,
and Taxes.
Jewels.
It's really, really amazing. So I read that you had never been to North Carolina before you accepted your job.
That's true.
You're crazy. So you'd never been to the state. You gave up everything at Meadowood and were like, I'm moving to the South.
Yeah, why not? After all the calculated moves that we made, I think you're allowed one.
So how's your experience been in North Carolina?
Oh, I love it. The food scene is ever growing and the agricultural, you know, growth there has been amazing. And working with farmers, I mean, I think that's really what is key and what's most fun about it is telling farmers that you can grow this if you try it. You know, and you have someone who's been doing nothing but growing corn and tomatoes their entire history in their family, and to see them kind of expand a little bit and see that excitement was really amazing.
I've been to the farmers market down mm-hmm. there. You guys have that great
like,
big...
Someone told me 29 markets in the
wow.
triangle, something like that.
You have that one huge one
the
that
Raleigh.
Has a restaurant attached to it.
Yeah.
And I've been there a few times now, and it was the first time I ever saw collard greens the size of like toddlers. Shocking.
Yeah, they get a little big down there.
Holy cow. And people would bring garbage bags and they would just like scoop all the collards into the garbage bag. And I was like, somebody's making a lot of collards tonight. So they better have a lot of ham hocks. So I took a look at the website for one and it said that you and Daniel are doing something called the Art of Micro Gastronomy. And you have to explain what that is for us.
So it's a nod to Southern food, but we're not doing Southern food in any form. We do occasionally feature an ingredient here or there, but it's mostly, just taking some of the classics and maybe twisting it up a little bit or giving someone the option to just come in and trust us and let us cook for you. I think that's our main focus and to try and get everybody on board with that. It's been a little bit of a lesson, but I think everyone's starting to kind of catch on now, which is really exciting to see that the food scene's starting to shift a little bit.
So those are words that could be a little intimidating. Art, microgastronomy. Were you concerned at all when you put that out there as sort of the message?
I mean, I think anyone is whenever you put something like that on there, but we're trying to offer something a little bit different and something of a different experience. I mean, food is laughter, love, and it's harmony. It brings everybody to the table. And if you can get everybody there nowadays, you might as well make an experience out of it.
It's clear that you're very serious about the food you make. I was looking, I was doing some social media stalking on you earlier, and I found your Twitter profile, not too hard to find. And it's very simple but straightforward. It says, "Chef, I cook for life, I cook for love, we cook to feed the soul." And then you told a reporter the following, "In the end, it's just food to you, but for us, it's our life, our passion. It's what we do, it's what we think about, dream about, study, and eat." That's really moving and very poetic. And
I think it's just the way you say it.
It's the way I say it. Well, you said it originally. But food clearly to you is not, this isn't just a career.
No.
Clearly, this is your art form.
Yes. I don't know what I would do if I wasn't cooking. But if anyone can attest to anything in their life. They have food memories, whether it be good, whether it be bad, whether it be boiled ground beef in a muffin tin that you don't ever want anybody to have ever again. That food memory kind of sparks an emotion. And for me, that's living. That's how you can accentuate yourself. That's how you can diversify yourself. And bringing people together, I mean, we're just looking out at the window here in Roberto's, and look at all the smiling faces and the conversation and the great gatherings. Everyone is emotional when it comes to food, whether you like it or not.
Your menu is really beautifully descriptive as well. It's too much to read, but I cut and pasted the dessert portion of the menu. And I'm guessing, do you two still have the divide between sweet and savory?
No, we actually kind of combine forces. So we have two sous chefs, John Fisher and Kevin Bowie. And John does most of the pastries. But we all come together at the end of the night and we all talk about what we can do together, because it's never just one person that can do everything together. And we know that. They know that. So we all do it as kind of a collaborative effort.
It takes a village, always.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'll just read the dessert dishes. So watermelon, and then after the word watermelon, it says chiffon, tarragon, coconut. Then you have sunflower with pineapple, dark chocolate, and honeysuckle. Carolina peaches with olive oil, bitter almond, and honey. And then cassatica, am I saying that right? Cassatica di bufala, toasted rice milk, flaxseed cracker, melon, and apple. I mean, that's so, I don't even know what those dishes are, and that's so beautiful. It sounds almost like a Ruth Reichel tweet to me. So I would love to go deep on some of those dishes. Okay. I noticed on the site that you had a thing called reconstructed watermelon. Mm-hmm. And I'll not to keep reading things, but I'll read the description. It says, some favorite memories from childhood, and this is on their website, some favorite memories from childhood can be surrounded by a hot summer day, a cool slice of watermelon, and a backyard barbecue. Who said adults can't have the same fun? At One, chefs Kim Floresca and Daniel Ryan have replicated the sweet summer fruit using watermelon sorbet, black sesame seeds, tarragon, and coconut cream. The shape is created using a half spherical mold that is layered with a tarragon gel, coconut cream, and watermelon sorbet. The herbaceous flavors of tarragon combine with the creaminess of the coconut and refreshing sorbet to create a captivating gastronomic experience. We should have made you get some on the plane in a cooler or something and bring that to us.
I don't know how that would have happened, but...
Probably would have been melted. Too convenient.
Yeah.
But that's so beautiful. Is that on the menu currently?
It is on the menu. We're actually going to change it, though.
Oh, no. You chefs. Always changing things.
I know. But, yeah, so it's just a slice of watermelon, but...
it is not just a slice of watermelon,
Kim. It is a
slice of
watermelon. Come on. You can see the picture online.
I did. The picture's beautiful, but clearly from that description, it's not just a slice of watermelon.
No, but, you know, it's summertime, and watermelon just is this... the emblem for what summertime really is. And it's just a fun way. I mean, food is very passionate to us, but you have to have fun. If you can't spark, you know, it goes back to that emotion. If you can't spark that into a childhood memory of, oh my God, remember this one time when I probably shouldn't have put vodka in a watermelon and chilled it, but it was awesome. I mean, there's always a story behind everything. So that's what we try and invoke.
So tell me about the creative process behind a dish like this. So do you and Daniel sit? I know you said the whole team gets together at the end of the night, but how does something like this even begin rolling into a dish that you are proud enough to put on the menu?
We try and change 3 to 4 dishes a week. So every time you come back, hopefully it's a little bit of a different experience. And at the end of every night, we're open for dinner Tuesday through Saturday. So every night we stay behind. Everyone leaves the restaurant, the sous chefs and myself and Daniel stay behind, and we do about an hour and a half, sometimes 2-hour meeting, and just discuss food. And we say, okay, I'm tired of seeing this dish. What can we do next? So this dish kind of sparked about what's cold, what's refreshing. It's hot in North Carolina and it's summery, and what's going to be delicious when it comes up. So this kind of started with that idea, which also led to the peach dish that you talked about earlier. But it was just kind of, let's have some fun with this. How can we make it something a little bit different? And so what we did was we took a half dome, made a watermelon sorbet, mixed it with a little black sesame seeds, and then froze that inverted it, and so the rounded side we coated with coconut gel, froze it again, and then we coated it with a tarragon just to look like a watermelon. But, I mean, it tastes really delicious, and it's probably would have gone really well with your watermelon and vodka slushy.
If only they had that today.
I was excited to try that, too.
I'm sorry. We will share the photo of the reconstructed watermelon because it's so beautiful. It's a bit of a tease that not all of us can eat it unless we go to one restaurant down in Chapel Hill. But hopefully this will inspire everybody to maybe add one restaurant to their restaurant bucket list and get in the car, get on a plane, and go see what you're doing. Do you dream about food?
Yes, constantly.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Mostly it's either smells or like when you can think of a kitchen just sizzling. I always have a dream that it just sizzles in my head, and then I think of like the next protein or something that would come up when we want to put it on the menu. But it's always sometimes smells and just memories of food for me. Do you dream of food?
I don't. No. I usually dream of being late and unprepared. I always have those dreams. Liz is laughing in the studio. Liz, are you the same? I always have those dreams where I've screwed up my semester planning for college, or I'm late for something. And
I've had that dream many times over, and then I realize, oh wait, this isn't a dream.
This is life. Well, anyway, this is life, people, and we are so privileged to have had Kim as our guest today. She is clearly a very, very special talent on the culinary scene, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and stopping by here to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
So thank you. Have fun in New York, and everybody, one restaurant. Check it out. I'm Carrie Diamond, and this is Radio Cherry Bomb. Radio Cherry Bomb is a co-production of the Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. To learn more about our magazine or to subscribe, visit cherrybomb.com. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or Stitcher.
This is Claudia Wu from Cherry Bomb Magazine. Thanks for listening to this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. This is our last show, but we'll be back in September with a great lineup of guests.
And to leave you with a quote, here's one from Cesar Chavez. The people who give you their food give you their heart. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501(c)(3) nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.